State CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah on Maine's COVID-19 status. As more and more Maine people receive their COVID-19 vaccination, the rate of new infections in this state is trending downward. Meantime, tourism season is gearing up, and the Maine CDC is encouraging all unvaccinated hospitality workers to be tested for COVID-19 twice weekly. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The man at the center of Maine's efforts to stem the COVID-19 pandemic is our guest today on Maine Calling. Dr. Nirav Shah has joined us regularly to answer your questions about infection rates, vaccines, hospitalizations, variants, and more. What are you trying to understand as we enter what many hope is the beginning of the end of the COVID-19 pandemic? Maine Calling is next. But first, this news update. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. It feels like life is kind of getting back to normal as COVID-19 cases drop and restrictions are lifted. Today, we will learn about continuing concerns about the virus and vaccines, and we will get answers to your questions. We know you have a lot of them. We welcome Dr. Nirav Shah back to the show. He is director of Maine's Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Hi, Dr. Shah.
Good morning, Jennifer, and good morning, Maine.
If you want to ask Dr. Shah a question, you can send an email, a brief email, please. We get lots of emails. talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Shah, let's just start with the big picture. You know, it's the opening scene of the movie and it's the wide shot. What does it look like from your seat?
Well, there are a lot of moving pieces that are going on right now. Even just today, Jennifer, even though case numbers had been low for several days and it had been many days up before yesterday before we'd reported any deaths. Today, for example, we reported over 100 new cases and sadly 10 individuals who had passed away with COVID. I want to talk about those 10 in just a minute to provide some perspective. But as you noted, in big picture terms, Jennifer, the light at the end of the tunnel is growing brighter every single day, but we're still in a tunnel. There are still people who are being affected by COVID. There are still people who are being hospitalized by COVID. And sadly, there are still people who are dying of COVID, but in remarkably lower rates and numbers than we saw a few months ago, let alone last season. I mentioned a moment ago that Maine CDC had reported 10 deaths today, for example. That's incredibly saddening. To lose 10 Mainers to COVID-19. However, many of those deaths that we reported were as a result of the periodic process we undertake to review death certificates to make sure we're capturing everyone who's passed away with COVID. And indeed, 7 of those 10 deaths were part of that review. And those are individuals who passed away between early to late March. Still a saddening number, but not 7 or 10 deaths all within the last 24 hours.
All right. That's important to know. Maine has, in the last few weeks, been in national news for having the highest vaccination rate in the country. Is that still the case?
We are up there in the league tables. I am so proud of the work that Maine people, healthcare providers, and logistics experts across the state of Maine, so proud of the work that we've all undertaken over the past 6.5 months to make Maine where it is in terms of our standing. We are, depending on which survey and tracker you take a look at, we are either in the number one spot in the country or the number two spot in the country in terms of the percentage of our population that has been fully vaccinated. Let me put that in perspective a little bit. Maine is one of the most vaccinated states in the country, and we in the United States are one of the most vaccinated countries on the globe. What that means is, in practical terms, Maine as a state is one of the most vaccinated places on earth. Again, what that means for you is that your chance of running into an unvaccinated person on the street is lower than just about anywhere else on the planet. That is a big deal because it means that the virus has much less room to run and cause infections across the state. It also provides a glimpse into the scientific backdrop that underlies some of the recent policy changes that we've made. It is because of the work of healthcare providers, hospitals, nurses, vaccinators, and Maine people to get us here that allows some of the policy changes that we've made and that I'm sure we'll talk about.
Dr. Shah, I want to ask you, I know that the more people are vaccinated, the more millions of people who are vaccinated, the more we understand about the vaccines. And I'm wondering what we're learning in terms of efficacy. For example, the people who have died, have those people been vaccinated?
You know, I'm glad you raised that, Jennifer. We have been and are now getting a more clear picture nationwide, worldwide, and within the state of just how good the vaccines are. I want to make a few comments there. The first is, if anything, we have undersold the effectiveness of the COVID-19 vaccines. They have, by my lights, outperformed just about every metric that you could evaluate a vaccine on, of course, including their effectiveness. About 2 weeks ago, the US CDC released a report on the real-world effectiveness of the COVID-19 vaccines and found that the real-world effectiveness matched up with what they found in the clinical studies, which is to say 90% plus effective out in the real world. We've started taking a look at who's getting COVID in the state, who's being hospitalized for COVID, and who's dying of COVID. And what we found on every one of those axes is that it is largely the majority unvaccinated individuals who are getting COVID, who are being hospitalized with COVID, and sadly, who's dying of COVID.
Dr. Shah, I know that Maine has made a big effort to try to get to rural communities in Maine, that there's a disparity between the more rural counties such as Piscataquis and Franklin County and places like Cumberland County. What is the state doing to counter that? And how, for example, I know that there's a mobile unit. How many people can the mobile unit reach, really?
Yeah, absolutely, Jennifer. We've made trying to ensure parity as much as possible between rural vaccination rates and urban vaccination rates a priority. The mobile unit is one part of that strategy. As a reminder for folks, that mobile unit is hanging out in Calais right now. Today, if you happen to be down east and you're looking for a place to get a J&J shot, it will be in Calais, no appointment needed, until 2 p.m., no charge whatsoever. The vaccines are free of charge to you. And then after Calais, it's going to swing up to Madawaska. Then it's going to actually come down to Portland and Old Orchard Beach. The mobile unit can do about 500 shots a day. Indeed, in the weeks that the mobile unit has been in Maine, it's provided over 9,000 vaccinations, mainly to rural Mainers. That's one part of our strategy. Another part of our strategy is preferentially choosing things like pharmacies, like Walmart and places like that, that have a higher preponderance in rural areas, making sure the vaccination is easy. A third part of our strategy is making it easy to get to those places. If you need a ride to a vaccination place, we'll get you there somehow. We will make sure that things like transportation are not the obstacle to getting you the vaccine. We've got more work to do to achieve that parity between some of Maine's rural counties and the more urban ones. That being said, even the rural counties, looking at them as if they were states unto themselves, they're still doing well relative to the national picture. But I want every county in Maine to be leading the way, not having some ahead of the pack and others behind.
And just to be clear, supply is no longer an issue, correct?
That is correct, Jennifer. We are not supply constrained when it comes to vaccinations in Maine right now. There are all three of the vaccines that are authorized are available in Maine. We've tried to make it easy for folks to figure out which site is offering which vaccine. For example, the mobile unit is offering the J&J vaccine. So we are awash in vaccines. What I want to do now is try to talk to folks across the state who still have questions, who still have concerns about the convenience of getting one, to identify barriers and lift those so we can get even more folks vaccinated.
Sure. Talking about barriers, and this is a rural state, and this is a state with a larger population of older people who maybe don't have their driver's license anymore or have other restrictions as far as how they get around. I'm wondering what kind of efforts are being made to reach those people who are little less have a little less movement, you know, ability to move around at free will. There's not a bus stopping by their house that's going to take them to the vaccination clinic.
Absolutely. So one of the ways that we're doing that is by making it easy to get a ride to a vaccination site. I mentioned this a moment ago, and I want to provide the number for that. If you need help getting to a place to get your vaccine, the state of Maine is there to help you get that ride. The number to call is 855-608-5172. And we ask that you do that at least 48 hours before your scheduled vaccination appointment. So we will help you get there.
So 1-855-608-5172 if you need a ride to get a vaccination. Dr. Shah, I want to ask you about the recommendation that just came out for hospitality workers. The recommendation that if you are not vaccinated and you are a hospitality worker, you get tested twice a week. We already have a tweet from somebody named Drew who feels like that's a pretty high burden.
It is. I mean, and the first preference would be that a hospitality worker get vaccinated. Indeed, I referenced a moment ago, Jennifer, that we're swinging the mobile unit back down to Portland and Old Orchard Beach. One of the rationales behind that would be to offer hospitality workers another shot at getting a shot. But for those who choose not to, although I strongly urge them to, getting tested twice a week is a way that they can stay safe, reduce the likelihood that they may pass the virus on to their coworkers and to the guests that they're serving. One of the ways in which we have made that easier is by changing our testing patterns at Walgreens. Walgreens has since for many months now, been offering the Binax Now, the rapid test that you can go in and get a result back within 10 to 12 minutes. We've made it even easier for folks who want to take advantage of that twice a week testing to go into a Walgreens and get that test result. Again, at no charge to them whatsoever.
We have a tweet here from Murph. If a person is fully vaccinated and they've been exposed to COVID-19, or think they might have been exposed, but they aren't experiencing any symptoms, should they still get tested?
They don't need to be tested in that situation unless they have any of the symptoms of COVID. Cough, fever, shortness of breath. If you don't have any symptoms whatsoever, then you don't need to be tested, nor do you need to quarantine. That's just how good the vaccines are. Again, if anything, we've been underselling the effectiveness of the vaccines. This is a good example of just how effective they are and why getting a vaccine can change your life. If you're fully vaccinated and you happen to be exposed to somebody, as long as you don't have symptoms, you don't need to go through the rigmarole of getting tested. You don't need to quarantine. If you have symptoms, that changes things a little bit though. But that is again, proof positive why getting vaccinated can get you back to where your life was before COVID.
A couple questions coming in about the variants that we're reading about in the news. Here's an email from Mari. She writes, could you please tell us what Maine is doing to monitor for virus variants such as B1617. Is there coordination with other states or regions in this? And how does it affect Maine policy? And a related email from Susie, how concerned are you about the Delta variant? Is there any indication that it could overcome the protective aspects of current vaccines?
Sure. Let's start with what we're doing to keep an eye on variants. We're doing a lot more than just simply trying to keep an eye on them. We are actively going out and searching for them. The way we do that is by taking samples that are positive for COVID and then actually doing a DNA, or in this case, an RNA fingerprint. That's what's called genomic sequencing. We're not just trying to figure out if it's the COVID virus or not. We're actually breaking the virus apart and looking at the exact fingerprint of the RNA. And we do that for as many of the samples that we can get our hands on. Indeed, as of last week, Maine was in the number one or the number two spot in terms of the percentage of the positive samples that we get that we actually end up sequencing. The US CDC recommends that we sequence about 5% of the samples. We sequence a lot more than that. That's how we're getting a handle on where things are. Now, what do these variants mean? Are we concerned about them? Yes, we're concerned about them. That's why we are actively looking for them to see what might be circulating in Maine. But the key here remains, the vaccines that we have in the United States have been exquisitely effective at dealing with all of the variants that have been identified to date. That doesn't mean that they will always be effective, but for the variants that we have thus far, the vaccines are extremely effective. To the extent that folks are concerned about these variants, the best thing they can do is go out and get vaccinated today.
We'll go to Eva, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Eva. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Shaw, I want to know a little bit about side effects. My 39-year-old daughter was recently, she has CLL, and she has enlarged lymph nodes throughout her body, 1 centimeter to 3 centimeters large. Anyhow, 4 days after she got her vaccine, she got above her breast towards the armpit huge lymph nodes. It's as big as a large egg or a small apple. And looking at side effects, nothing like that shows up in the literature. I researched the internet, and by midnight I found out, yes, this does happen in cancer patients. I wonder why it isn't more widely known.
Eva, thank you so much for your question. Dr. Shaw.
Sure. Thanks, Eva, for that question. And you're right. In certain individuals, one of the ways that the vaccines show that they are working is by causing a temporary increase or swelling of the lymph nodes. The lymph nodes play a central role in our body's immune system. They are hubs of the immune system across our body, and it's where the immune cells go and congregate as they are undertaking their missions. One of the ways that can manifest is by some temporary swelling of those lymph nodes, particularly in the area that you mentioned around the armpit. It's been documented. I believe I've certainly read about it in the literature. And so what your daughter experienced is not something atypical, but certainly if she has particular questions, her oncologist would be the right person to check in with. But that type of temporary swelling, with or without the medical condition that she has, is not atypical.
Eva, thank you so much for your question, and we will get to more of your questions for Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shaw in just a minute. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, a locally owned energy efficiency company with career opportunities available. Details at evergreenyourhome.com. And the Jackson Laboratory, a nonprofit on a mission to improve health through the power of genetics and genomics. Learn more at jax.org.
Millions of Americans are what's known as long-term unemployed, out of work for 6 months or more, and that could have some lasting consequences.
When you get constant rejection over and over and over again, it does start to feel a little bit deflating.
I'm Kai Rizdal. What might help the pandemic long-term unemployed? Next time on Marketplace.
Listen in for Marketplace. That's this evening at 6:30, right here on Maine Public Radio. Are you looking for something to do? Want to let people know about an event that your organization is sponsoring? Maine Public's community calendar is here to help. If you represent an organization and want to let listeners know about your event, be it virtual, outdoors, or otherwise, it's easy to enter the details on our online form, and it's easy to find things to do. You can search by type of event, date, or location. Maine Public's community calendar, bringing the people of Maine together with concerts, exhibits, workshops, and more. Visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine CDC Director Nirav Shah joins us to answer your questions about the latest information on COVID-19. Share your comments or questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or on Instagram. And of course, you can call 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to an email here from Anna. She writes, I am a 13-year-old currently in the car on my way to get my second Pfizer vaccine, and I was just wondering why you lifted the mask mandate for everyone and not only for the fully vaccinated. I also wondered if you have a rough guess of when the next age group will be eligible for the vaccine.
Sure thing, Anna. Well, first of all, hey, I'm so proud and happy that you're going to get your second dose. 2 weeks after today, or 2 weeks after whenever you happen to get that second dose, I hope that means the beginning of a much more normal summer for you and your fully vaccinated friends. Now, in terms of your question about the mask mandate, Anna, it kind of goes back to what I mentioned a moment ago, just how spectacularly effective the vaccines are. For someone who is fully vaccinated, as you'll soon be, the chance that they could harbor the COVID-19 virus and pass it on to somebody else is vanishingly low. It's only happened a handful of times here in Maine in a population of 1.3 million. So that's why people who are fully vaccinated don't have to wear masks. They certainly can if they wish to, and we should have the grace to accommodate that, but they don't need to. In terms of folks who aren't vaccinated, well, This comes down to what we want folks to do to look after themselves. Folks who aren't fully vaccinated should continue wearing masks, particularly if they are somewhere that requires them to wear a mask, whether it's on a train or on any type of public transportation in a healthcare setting, or if they are going to a place that requires them to wear a mask, whether it's a grocery store or a friend's house. Wearing a mask in that situation, if you're not vaccinated, is the right thing to do from a public health perspective. The reason we didn't make it the case is that we need to have a system. If we make something the case by a requirement from the governor, we have to have a way to figure out who's been vaccinated and who hasn't been vaccinated. That's a really difficult thing to do on the fly at the moment you're entering the grocery store. And that's why we left it to businesses to determine how they wanted to approach that situation. I can certainly talk more about that, but I want to get to the other question you raised, which is, what about your friends who are not yet 12? Well, that the date as to when they may be able to get the vaccine, first up will be Pfizer. It's been changing a little bit. Initially, we thought it was going to be a little bit later this year, but just yesterday, Dr. Fauci from the U.S. government indicated that it might be sooner than that, maybe around the time of Thanksgiving. So it's going to probably be later this year or at the beginning of next year.
All right. We'll go to Steep Falls and to William. Hi, William. Go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Shah. So thankful for your work and your efforts and particularly the way you can communicate what's going on. I've just been thankful. So my question relates to a bigger picture, how you continue to monitor the progress of the actual behavior of the virus and the mutations, and how that relates to the changes that have happened, these variants popping up, and the effects of them. As I've listened, you said that the effectiveness has been superb or excellent against all the variants that we've come across so far. So if you can just answer kind of a bigger picture of what it looks like from your position where you're so carefully monitoring everything. Thank you.
Sure. Of course. Well, thank you both for your question as well as for your kind words. And you're right. We are very carefully monitoring the situation with variants across the globe, as well as within our own borders here in Maine. And we do that by taking positive samples that we get from laboratories across the state of Maine. Not just one lab, not just one geography, but from testing sites across the state of Maine. And we send those to one of three places to do that DNA, or in this case, RNA fingerprinting. One of those places is our own Maine CDC laboratory here in Augusta, which has the capacity to do this. Another place is the Jackson Laboratories. Another place is the US CDC. And we send those samples to try to sequence as many of them as we can. What we've seen so far is that the variants that have been described around the world have been detected here in Maine, be it the variants that were first described in the UK, variants that were first described in Southern Africa, et cetera. We have found them here, but they haven't taken off in a way that they have in other jurisdictions, such as the UK, for example. But that may change. One of the reasons why getting vaccinated is so important right now for everybody is to try to foreclose the opportunity for the virus to mutate and generate its own type of variant here. Let me say that a little bit differently. I know that there's a lot of concern. I have that concern about viruses or variants being imported from another part of the country or another part of the globe here to Maine. But the other concern that we have to have is variants themselves being generated here within the state, as has happened in Southern California and New York City. That same thing can happen here unless we vaccinate as many people as possible and shut off the possibility for the virus to run. The way that we stay safe against variants now and in the future is to vaccinate as many people as possible. That's the best way out of this.
All right. Thank you, William, for your questions. We're going to go to Anne, who's calling from Mid-Coast, Maine. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Shah. I'm calling because I have an autoimmune disease. It's CLL, like a previous caller. And I understand that being fully vaccinated, you are not 100% vaccinated. So the research that I read was saying that I was about 50% vaccinated. My adult children are home visiting from out of state, and everyone in the family has been fully vaccinated, but they are going out and visiting friends and stuff who may not be fully vaccinated. So my question is, can they shed the virus still, even though they're fully vaccinated, to me? And should I be masked in the house, or should any of them be masked in the house?
Sure.
Talked to my oncologist. He wasn't sure either.
Well, I appreciate you looking after yourself in this manner. That's great to see, and you're certainly asking the right question. Based on everything we know right now about the effectiveness of the vaccine in folks who do not have an autoimmune condition or an oncological condition such as yourself and the previous caller. So for folks who do not have those conditions, the vaccines are tremendously effective at reducing the likelihood that someone will get sick from COVID, as well as reducing the likelihood that they may harbor or carry the virus with them and then inadvertently shed it to somebody who has not been vaccinated, or in your case, in whom the vaccine may not be fully effective. The likelihood is low to begin with, especially because everyone in the orbit is vaccinated. Again, the more folks who are vaccinated, the fewer places that the virus has to run. In your situation, though, you're right. Given your other condition, the vaccine may not be in the 95% effectiveness range. It may be lower than that. Whether you wish to wear a mask indoors or not, that's going to be a highly personal decision. I would certainly understand the rationale for doing so, belt and suspenders. But I would go into that conversation with your family and your children, recognizing that the risk is thankfully low to begin with. It may be higher than another family, but it's low to start with. But if you want to take a belt and suspenders approach, I would certainly understand that.
Anne, thanks for your question. Another Anne from Westport Island has a similar question. Hi, Anne, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for taking the call. My husband was diagnosed about a year ago with low-level CLL, and he's not undergoing any treatment. And we got the vaccine, and he went in for his blood test last week, and he's still at a low level of CLL, but the doctor said he was concerned that he didn't see any antibodies, so he gave him an antibody test. And after 5 days, we got that back, and it says he has no antibodies. So my question was, is he able then to, can he get another vaccine? We got the Pfizer. Would another vaccine be more effective? And or is there anything else that we can do, like an infusion of antibodies to help that situation out? Thank you.
Thank you for that question. Certainly an interesting one. This is getting into the area of specific medical advice. And I unfortunately, without knowing the full medical complement and history, difficult for me to weigh in. In general, those who have been fully vaccinated can start showing antibody production 7 up to 14 days after they get their shot. But given that your spouse has this other medical condition, every situation there may be different. Getting another vaccine may be an option. There may be others as well. This is really a question, I think, your spouse's oncologist may need to check in with other experts in infectious diseases and immunology to get a more clear answer on. It's certainly an interesting one, but unfortunately not one that I can provide a lot of concrete guidance for here.
And thank you for your question and good luck to your husband. I have a question here from Jim. Over the past year, I've experienced a few of the symptoms such as altered smell, muscle aches, but never fever and not all at once. Is it possible that I've had COVID-19 and not realized it? Should I get tested to find out? Which test would be used for that? I am now fully vaccinated. Boy, Dr. Shaw, I know a lot of people who think, you know, I think I might have had it.
Mm-hmm. It's very possible that you did have it, entirely possible, especially in light of the intermittent symptoms that you've had over the past year, Jim. Given that you're fully vaccinated, there's not really a test that will allow us to zoom back into history and figure out whether at some point in your unvaccinated time you had COVID or not. What I would do is rejoice in the fact that you are fully vaccinated, and what happened in the past happened in the past, and get back to the way that you want to live your life as it were before COVID.
All right. And from Harriet, it's wonderful that Mainers lead in vaccination rates, but many of the visitors here are from the southern U.S. where rates are very low. How do unvaccinated people from away who are not wearing masks impact the threat of the virus spreading here?
Well, one of the interesting things is that who comes to Maine tends to be predominantly folks from the Northeast. It's not exclusively, don't get me wrong, but many of those who come to visit Maine are happen to be from adjoining areas of the country where vaccination rates are high. So that already lowers our risk, but it's not everybody. And certainly we are likely to get a fair share of folks coming from areas where vaccination rates are not as high. The best way that we in Maine can prevent ourselves is by all being vaccinated, such that if a large number of folks coming from another state who happen to be unvaccinated and decline to wear masks, if they happen to do that, then if we in Maine are fully vaccinated up to the brim, their likelihood of introducing an outbreak that would adversely affect Maine people goes down that much more. Again, the more that Mainers are vaccinated, the less room the virus has to run, no matter who's bringing it in. Now, fortunately, and I think it's important to note, that throughout last summer season's tourism, we saw very, very few cases being introduced by visitors to the state. Obviously, this summer is going to be a lot different from last summer in ways that I hope are good for the hospitality industry. But the way that we can stay safe here is by all of us getting vaccinated as quickly as possible.
An email here from Lori. Dr. Shaw said that largely the unvaccinated are getting COVID Are the statistics available online somewhere daily to compare might make the vaccinated feel safer and might make the unvaccinated more motivated to get one? And I'll just add to Lori's question, Dr. Shaw, have you thought about when you're reporting deaths, also reporting whether or not that person was vaccinated?
Well, we have thought about this. So first of all, these numbers are available online. As of yesterday, 333 of the cases that we've had since December 14th have been among vaccinated people. So of the tens of thousands of cases that we have logged, since vaccines became available, 333 have been among vaccinated folks. The other whatever tens of thousands have been incorporated since then have been among unvaccinated folks. I'll put it differently. 99.96% of all of the people who have gotten vaccinated have not gotten COVID. So about 0.04% of the people who've been vaccinated have ended up getting COVID. Similarly with deaths, in recent days, even a vast majority of the deaths that we've seen associated with COVID have been among folks who are not fully vaccinated. We can report those things, but we may not know the moment a death is reported to us, the person's complete medical history. I don't want to delay or cover up deaths that are occurring to delay that process, to go through and figure out whether someone was vaccinated or not. I want to be straight with people and quick and transparent with what we know, rather than delay that process and wait for us to find out all the information.
We are talking to Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief, very brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment on our Facebook page or Instagram. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Cherished Possessions, a consignment shop working with homeowners in transition, Auburn Street in Portland, or cherishedpossessions.com.
I'm Tanya Mosley. A movie about one of Disney's most memorable villains kicks off the summer movie season.
What was your name?
Cruella.
Oh.
But will anybody be going back to theaters? That's next time on Here and Now.
Who wants to be nice? Who wants to be tame? All of you good guys.
Join us for Here and Now. That's today at noon, right here on Maine Public Radio. If you have an Alexa power device like the Amazon Echo or a Google Home smart speaker, you can easily find Maine Public Radio whenever or wherever you'd like with a single command. Visit mainepublic.org for helpful tips on accessing Maine Public Radio on your voice-activated device. Enjoy.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. My guest today, Dr. Nirav Shah, who is director of the Maine CDC. He's here to discuss the latest on the pandemic in Maine. You can call 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page or Instagram. So many questions coming in. I'm going to go to Rena, who's calling from Hollowell. Hi, Rena. Go ahead.
Thank you, Jennifer, for taking my call. And Dr. Shah, I am so grateful you're here in Maine. I'm afraid, though, that you won't be able to answer my question. I'm soon to be 85. I've had heart surgery, lung surgery, kidney, lung problems, and I'm a diabetic. The people I really want to see are under five. I've been in my apartment basically since the 12th of March in 2020. I'm better than most people, but I'd like to get out. What are my chances?
Well, Rena, you sound great, and that's awesome. And I'm glad to hear that. Thanks for calling. Have you been fully vaccinated, Rena?
I have, but there are people in my apartment building that have not. And, of course, privacy, I don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I know that a lot of people in my town and my one of my best friends won't get vaccinated. So this is what worries me.
Well, I'm glad you raised that, Rena. I think a lot of folks across the state, across the country, are facing the same, decision you're facing. And here's how I would, if you were my mom, here's what I'd say, Rena. You know, the vaccines are so incredibly good. Now, as you noted, Rena, you've had some health conditions, and in folks with different health conditions, the vaccines may be a little bit less effective, but still really, really good. The other thing I think, Rena, that is really important, and again, if you were my mother, what I'd say is, Mom, it's really important to get out. It's important to get back to seeing your social circle. It's important to get outside and exercise and get fresh air and live life, because that's really important. Mental and emotional health is at least as important as our physical health is. Really, they're all intertwined. So Rena, you know, one way to dip your toe back in the water is maybe to check in with family members of yours who have been vaccinated fully. and see if you can check in with them, hang out with them, have dinner with them. You can start by doing that outside as the weather's getting better. It's a lot less risky being outside, especially if you're fully vaccinated. And then as your faith in being back outdoors goes back up, you can start venturing back indoors. But I think now that you're fully vaccinated, it's really important for all of us to resume those social connections that may have been frayed a little bit during the pandemic. We're still in the pandemic, but during the height of the pandemic.
Rena, good luck to you. Email from Beth here. Do people who have recovered from COVID-19 need to get vaccinated? If so, can you explain why?
Yes, they should get vaccinated. And here's why. There are two different ways that our body's immune system can be primed to fight the COVID virus. One way is by having had COVID in the past, so-called natural immunity. The other way is by getting a vaccine, so-called vaccine-induced immunity. One of the interesting findings with COVID is that the strength, the durability, and the duration of the immunity that you get from the vaccine is actually better than the immunity. It's stronger, longer lasting, and more durable than the immunity that you get from just having had COVID itself. In fact, in a study that was published last week, the strongest level of immunity is actually the combination of having had COVID and then getting the vaccine on top of that. So for those folks out there who have had COVID and are worried about what the future may bring from the variants we've been talking about, by getting the shot on top of having COVID, you are doubly protected from anything that may be out there right now.
Well, let's talk about people who have had COVID. Dawn on Facebook wants to know if there's any follow-up for post-COVID patients. I, Dr. Shaw, have had a conversation with a friend whose daughter is studying dance and is finding that people who have recovered from COVID don't have the stamina that they did before. So if you could talk about what we're learning about people who have had COVID and what kind of treatments and follow-up there might be for them.
Sure, Jennifer. This is, I'll start by observing that there are a lot of folks out there who, in questioning the ferocity or intensity of COVID-19, have said, well, most folks don't die of it. And that may be true. Indeed, most infectious diseases are such that most folks don't die of them. But one of the things that we have certainly seen with COVID is that for a fraction of the population, a growing fraction, those who may not pass away because of COVID are left with lingering symptoms, what some medical providers have now called long COVID. And there are different hypotheses as to why that may be the case and as to who might be affected by that. There are specialists and specialty centers across the country that are being set up to care for those individuals who are experiencing these longer term side effects of having had COVID itself, as well as to research different therapies that may be effective for them. It's too early to tell what predisposing factors may lead to somebody having long COVID, as well as what treatments may ultimately be the most effective. This is a scientific question that I think we're learning more about with each passing week. But I think it's important for folks to know that even those who may not pass away because of COVID are still at risk for the longer term symptoms, many of which, as you noted, Jennifer, can be quite life altering.
All right. So I'm going to go to Diane, who's calling from Auburn. Hi, Diane. Go ahead.
Hello. And I just want to thank you, Dr. Shaw, and your team for doing amazing work. There's been a lot of discussion around immunizing the younger group, which is important, and I realize that. But I've been waiting patiently to hear when congregate living is going to open up for inside visitation. I have a mother who's there, and she's we're just struggling, waiting as the numbers, watching the numbers fall and listening to the reports. And I haven't heard anything about when the older folks are going to get a crack at having their families reunited.
I'm so glad that you raised this. My answer is in keeping with the spirit of what I mentioned to Rena from Hollowell a couple of moments ago, which is as we have vaccines on board now, it's really critical in my estimation that we start reconnecting and repairing some of the social bonds that may have been left aside because we were all huddled indoors for so long. Congregate living settings, long-term care facilities are no exception to that. Visitation is starting to pick back up in various and different ways. Much of the guidelines around this are put out by the federal government, a little bit less so on the state side. But my hunch, my understanding is that as case numbers go down in Maine, as well as nationally, we will start to see the guidelines around that loosening significantly, such that more and more visitation can occur. I don't have to tell you how important it is for all of us to be able to see our family members in congregate care, and certainly for those residents to be able to reconnect with their friends and family. But I think, as with so many COVID things, it's going to start changing in the near future.
Diane, thanks for your question. Here's an email from Susan that actually reflects several of them, Dr. Shaw. I know we touched on younger children a little while ago, but we're going to return to that. She writes, could Dr. Shaw please provide more specific guidance for vaccinated parents of kids who are too young to be vaxxed? What do we know about vaccinated people transmitting the virus? Could vaxxed parents unwittingly transmit the virus to their children? Is it okay for parents of unvaccinated kids to be out in public without a mask, or should we just continue to mask for the sake of our kids? To date, the guidance has been unclear, and it's adding a new level of stress in the reopening world.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are two elements of this question. One element is a scientific one, and then the other element is a parental one. The scientific element, which was referenced in some of the questions, is around the likelihood that fully vaccinated parents or adults or those over 12 might inadvertently introduce the virus to a child under the age of 12. That seems unlikely based on everything we know right now. Now, notice I said unlikely. It's not zero risk, but it seems to be a very low risk. To the extent that that risk is of concern, it can be lowered even further by doing things like having the younger child wear a mask. That reduces that already low risk even more. And certainly if the unvaccinated youngster is indoors with other unvaccinated folks, for example, in a school setting, wearing a mask helps even further. It's also important to keep in mind the other scientific element, which is COVID can certainly affect kids. Kids can get COVID, they can transmit COVID, and they can sometimes get really sick from COVID. Thankfully, though, on the whole, that happens less than it does with adults. That's a good thing. The other element, though, of this, though, is the parental aspect. And the way that I've thought about this is parents should think about what they value as priorities, and then look to public health for ways to do those things safely. It's not so much about public health making pronouncements about what is safe and what is not safe. That's a family decision. What we can do is help you do the things that are priorities for you more safely. So if going out to eat with you and your family, including some youngsters under the age of 12, if that's a priority for you, there are ways that we can help you do it more safely. For example, by providing guidance to try to eat outside in outdoor settings, or if you want to be inside, looking for places that have a lot of ventilation or not a lot of crowding. All of those things can help reduce the likelihood that your under 12-year-old children are exposed to as little COVID as possible.
We'll go to Larry calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. Back a million years ago, I was in the service. I don't even know if they publish it anymore, but I used to read Morbidity and Mortality as part of my job. We've had MRSA, Ebola, Legionnaire's disease, COVID, and they are occurring in more frequently, and there's certainly a chance of another respiratory disease coming along. And I'm wondering why we simply don't tell the people who refuse to get vaccinated that you either get vaccinated or we will quarantine you. The law allows such. If you remember, the former governor, LePage, quarantined a lady who had worked with Ebola. She came back free and was, quarantined for a long time, but LePage made her quarantine for an even further period. I don't understand why we just don't force these people to get vaccinated.
All right, Larry. Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Shaw.
Sure, Larry. Well, you know, you're right. That same journal that you read is still in publication by the US CDC, the so-called MMWR. And it's been the standard bearer of much of COVID and where much of the cutting edge research has been published. It's one of the few things I try to make time to read every single week. And, you know, one of the findings that they found is that vaccinated folks are much less likely to get and transmit COVID. It does leave open the question you raise, which is what's the best way to approach folks who are unvaccinated? And our options there exist on a spectrum. My approach right now is to make the case for folks why getting vaccinated is important for them, for their family members, and for their communities. And I think we've done a good job of getting that out, evidenced by our supremely high vaccination numbers. But there will be some fraction of the population that just decides that vaccination is not for them. What our policy approach is for that fraction of the population, that's what you're referring to. I think there's a lot of room for discussion there. Unclear where everyone will land on that as a country, as a state, as a globe, how we work with folks who decline to get vaccinated. As you're aware, Larry, that's been an omnipresent challenge ever since vaccines were first introduced in the world.
Thank you, Larry. We just have about a minute left, Dr. Shaw, so I'll go to a question that I hope has a quick answer. This is an email from Denim. Have you heard anything about clinical trials for antivirals effective against COVID?
Yes, there have been throughout COVID a number of different antivirals or different types of medications that have greatly improved overall survival for COVID, as well as helping people stay out of the hospital. We've had them in Maine and have been widely using them to great effect. All the more reason that the light at the end of the tunnel is getting brighter and brighter each day.
All right. Since you were so quick, we have time to squeeze in one more. An email from Carrie. What is the positivity rate for unvaccinated adults?
Well, the positivity rate is the positivity rate. We don't divide it between vaccinated and unvaccinated adults because when you go to get tested, we don't ask whether you've been vaccinated or not. But generally speaking, folks who are vaccinated are not getting tested. The positivity rate right now in Maine is 1.68%. And we assume that the bulk of people who are getting tested are unvaccinated.
All right. Well, Dr. Nirav Shah, it's always a pleasure to have you on Maine Calling. We always have to leave questions on the table, unfortunately. Dr. Nirav Shah, Director of Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Today's sound engineer, Bill Johnson, with help from John Keimel. Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith produced the program. Join me tomorrow as we discuss books by Maine authors as part of the annual Read Me program. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.